headphones on so we can see.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to tune in to our first podcast on innovation in the workplace. So different topic we haven't really addressed much. So I'm joined by Mr. Joe Doherty here. Joe is, safe to say, Joe, you're probably pretty much an expert in this area. He's got about 10 years experience in quality assurance and various roles. And he also is in the middle of doing a master's in University of Ulster. What's your master's on, Joe, again, that you're completing?
So the master's is in business development and innovation.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's great. So thanks a million, Joe, for taking time out to be with us. So I think what I'll do is just dive in to just ask, you know, strip it all back. We're chatting about innovation. What is innovation in your words or in your experience? And why is it so important? Yeah.
Well, innovation in business is effectively what evolution is in biology. It is change. Yeah. It's novelty. It's and it's moving forward. So the beauty of innovation is that every company, if they're serious about moving forward or even about surviving, they have to be looking at innovation. Innovation isn't something that only Fortune 50 companies need to do in order to stay ahead.
So everyone needs to.
Yeah. Everybody, small to medium enterprises, innovation exists at absolutely every level.
Okay.
And the beauty of innovation is that it's a broad term. It has 100 books by 100 authors that you can read on, and they'll all tell you something different. So the good thing about innovation and the bad thing is that it's also completely subjective.
Right. Yes. For each company, it's all different. There's different approaches on it. And because I know we think of innovation, I would think of, you know, Apple and like, you know, these major companies are constantly innovating their products and stuff. But as you say, it's subjective. It's, you have to, no matter what size company you are, do you know?
So like from my reading, there's kind of four main types of innovation that we'd be very familiar with. So there's architectural innovation. That's kind of innovation to maintain the status quo or kind of improve on
existing,
kind of existing, but also kind of, it's only really there to sustain your place, not move your company forward. It's more about almost like a handbrake that stops your company rolling backwards. The term disruptive innovation, that has a kind of a terrible reputation because people think disruptive innovation goes into a marketplace and destroys it rather than it goes in and immediately changes it. So an example of disruptive innovation, you mentioned Apple before, but the iPhone, when Steve Jobs walked across that stage in 2007 and held up an iPhone, that was disruptive innovation. That was saying to everyone in the handheld mobile phone carrier world, this is what it's going to look like. And he literally staked his entire company on it. So that was disruptive innovation.
Yeah.
The third type is the one that everybody will be familiar with. It's incremental. So incremental is similar to a continuous improvement model. It's when you're such kind of, and again, this isn't something that's to stop you falling behind. You can make incremental improvements on existing products. Mm-hmm. Things like, very common in the motor industry where you go, well, what's the difference between last year's Ford Focus and next year's Ford Focus? What's going to attract the market to this new car when they already have the old one? What's different? What's novel? That's incremental.
Right. Okay. So I think most places, most companies probably have incremental innovation. Improving their products, updating. Yeah, exactly. What's going to make it more attractive for somebody to upgrade their Ford Focus or whatever next year.
And it's not just in products. It's also in processes as well. Yeah. If you are looking within your company for a better way of manufacturing or a way of cutting costs, that would be incremental innovation as well. Because you're taking what is there already, and instead of throwing it away and starting again, you're taking what you have and slowly building upon it.
Okay, that makes complete sense.
So the fourth thing then, and this is the kind that there's not as much written on it should be, and it's called radical innovation. That's when, rather than changing the market or surviving in the market, it literally creates a market. So imagine, it's basically an example of when someone creates something that nobody knew they wanted or needed before.
Okay, right.
to borrow a line from, I don't actually think Henry Ford said it, but a lot of people attributed to him, when they asked Henry Ford, you know, what do your customers want? He says, well, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have asked for a faster horse.
Very good, very good.
So this is when you come in and go, well, here's the one of the largest markets in the world now, but once upon a time, there was no such thing as a motor trade market and no such thing as a...
And you have to say, I think going back to mentioning Steve Jobs again, I think he was a bit like that. He didn't do much market research, really. He was just kind of like, you know, I know what you want. I know what the consumers want and what, you know what I mean? So it's same as Henry Ford.
It's tricky too, because innovation, especially in that space, you have to listen to the voice of the customer. And mm-hmm. most people have feedback. They'll put out market surveys. They'll use a fantastic market research and development people to come back and tell you, this is what the trends are suggesting. This is the way we should go forward. But with the likes of Henry Ford or Steve Jobs, they have to anticipate what people will want before people even know what it is.
They want it themselves. Yeah, exactly.
That's the visionary part of it. That's the imagination. Because as I said before, you know, if you wanted a better phone in the 2000s, chances are you would have gone with a handset that you were more familiar with rather than an iPhone. And now they're not. iPhone have about 50% of the market share. So
yeah, exactly. You don't have the little block phones anymore. That's it. So tell me again those four types of innovation. That was a really good explanation of each of them. So we have incremental.
So we have architectural, disruptive, incremental, and radical. Now there are some people say there's as many as 11 or 12 different types of innovation, but we don't have all day, so those are the
we're on a time limit. No, that's really good, and I liked all your explanations. So I was just going to ask you then, Joe, so why is innovation more important now than ever before? Obviously, I know we touched on technology there as well, like, you know, how much it's changed, I suppose, in the last 20 years. If you don't keep up with technology these days, or new systems, even systems for your employees, like, you know, the Envel platform and like different things like that, you know, you're gonna, like, all parts of your business, the technology is so super important to keep up to date with. So why is it, in your opinion, then? Is it like, is there something more?
So it's more important now than ever, and it's because change is happening faster than at any time in any industrial era ever before. So people talk about now this as being like the fourth industrial era. Some people dispute that, but most people would agree this is taking the form of the fourth industrial era. So you're talking progress at a rate that, you know, if people used to talk about Moore's law, I think Moore was someone who worked with IBM, and he suggested in the 60s when he was making microprocessors or small computers, that they every 2 years they would either become half the size or half the price or have twice the capacity. And that was a thing that over the next I think it happened until like into the 2020s, that was the case. The machinery would keep changing at this accelerated rate. Now we're not just within process, but in all forms of or all types of business and production and manufacturing. If you're standing still, you're moving backwards, obviously. But now, if you're going forward, you could be falling backwards too, because it's not just change is moving forward, but it's the rate of change is getting faster, faster and faster. Like some people call it exponential.
Expansion.
So it's not just going to get faster, but it's eventually going to get so fast that if you haven't already started moving in terms of innovation, you're already in the past.
You're already falling behind. Yeah, absolutely.
A great example of that, and a lot of people will be familiar with the company, was Nokia.
Oh, Nokia. Yeah, jeez, I think Nokia, everyone had their first burner on a Nokia. I think, I didn't even really thought about it. They're far from most popular. Like, you know, obviously now we've got, Samsung. So Samsung iPhones, you know, you never think of a Nokia. So what would have happened that they were once,
massive. So Nokia were, to this day, they still have the highest selling handset device of all time. Like, it was an enormous company that came from kind of relative obscurity in the late 80s and early 90s. And they were able to kind of catch be at the kind of right place at the right time in terms of their innovation.
Maybe
a bit of luck. There's always a bit of luck in it, but they were able to understand what people wanted with what was about to happen in the mobile phone market. The mistake that Nokia made was that they didn't anticipate that what they were doing wasn't what people would want forever.
Right.
So, for example, I think they had their most successful year around 2005 or 2006. And I'm sure at that year's Christmas party, everybody was shaking hands and back clapping each other. But at that stage, they were already past the point of saving. And they had their best year ever.
Because and why is that just,
Well, they doubled down on bad innovation models. So they didn't listen to the voice that, well, they thought they were listening to the voice of their customer, but with the way you discussed before, Steve Jobs anticipated what customers would want. Nokia believed they knew already what they would want, and we would just keep giving it to them.
Right.
So,
okay. Yeah.
A very specific example is the operating system, and that's the thing on your phone that pops up about twice a year and takes an hour to update, and nobody likes to do it. So iOS and Android are your two main operating systems, and Nokia fully believed they didn't need that, that they would have their own, a thing called Symbian, which was very, very old-fashioned. What it was good for was if you had a device, it made sure that that device ran very, very well within itself. Okay. But of course, as you all know now, mobile phones are interactive and connect in many different ways. It's more about apps and things like that there. So this Symbian thing, out of date, probably before they even noticed it.
Right. Yeah. So, it's mad though, isn't it? It goes back to that whole, the rate of change in technology. Like if you might think you're doing a great job, you have it all, then suddenly like Nokia, you fall off the face of the earth. And hope nobody from Nokia is going to watch this now or tune in.
if there's anyone still there, but like Nokia did try to innovate, but they didn't anticipate early enough that what they were doing is probably moving in the wrong direction. They saw all their forecasts and all their trends going in the right direction and never thought for a second that this isn't going to last forever. People will always want this thing. It wasn't the case, but it wasn't just the case that I think the interesting thing is it's almost like in a cowboy film or in a movie where the lead actor has a small injury and he doesn't notice it until the end of the film. Nokia were dead men walking for 4 or 5 years, making great market impacts. And then in the space of 2 years, they fell off the face of the earth effectively.
Oh, poor Nokia. but it's a great, great example, though, of how quickly, as you said, within 2 years, they were like industry leaders in the mobile phone and the market. And then suddenly then, not to be seen, but it all goes down to innovation, not having the right innovative model in, you know what I mean, in your business and falling behind. So I suppose, it's interesting.
They were kind of a victim of closed innovation versus open innovation.
I was just actually going to ask you about that because me and Joe were chatting previously. He's just full of knowledge. I was picking his brains about a few of these things. Can you tell us what open innovation and closed innovation is? And then just, I think we might touch on just what are the advantages? Because I know open innovation, you were telling me, is more commonly used in a lot of companies now. So why is it what's the advantages of using it over closed? So if you just explain to us anyway, what are the difference of the two, or what are they? So, to have simple terms.
Open innovation and closed innovation. So closed innovation is a very typical, I wouldn't say it's an old model, because a lot of modern companies would still be like, you could argue that Facebook or something of a closed innovation model, and they're certainly not suffering. So open and closed innovation is all about the ideation part of the business. Where do you come up with your ideas, your creativity?
Idea generation stage,
effectively anything. So in a closed innovation model, you'll have your research and development department, and it's a one-way system where the research and development starts here. It goes through more refinement, and at the other side of it comes out a product or a service or whatever you have. Mm-hmm. Open innovation, you'll have research and development, but they'll also be looking outside
the organization.
kind of over their neighbor's fence every so often to see what anyone else is doing, you know?
Yeah.
And not just that, they'll be taking in ideas from the communities and, you know, feedback from their customers and using that information as best as possible to take information from absolutely everywhere. And then, you know, so imagine research development comes from here, then all these other ideas are coming up top and bottom. Yeah. And on the other side, you have your open innovation product.
Yeah.
The thing is as well, open innovation is not a one-way street. So it goes back and forth. So there's a byproduct in open innovation, which means to say that if I have an idea or a patent or something like that there, that other people might be able to use it because I've opened up my process.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So with Nokia, they weren't interested in what everybody else were doing because they were so sure what they were doing. Because then, in fairness, every time they looked at their balance sheet, they were being reaffirmed that this is the right way to do business.
A profitable organization. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
The old, if it's not broke, don't fix it idea.
Don't fix it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it.
So they didn't, well, they weren't particularly interested what Steve Jobs, who used to make Mac computers, was going to do with a mobile phone. He had, for as far as they could see, he had nothing that they could be taught. You know, they were the, right. They had all the knowledge and they weren't going to share it. The other companies then, like Samsung or Sony, they used an open innovation model where they,
right.
When they seen a, you know, the iPhone on stage, they immediately went, that's going to change the business. So
yeah, you have to jump on it. Yeah.
They had an open innovation model. So they would have looked at what their competitors were doing. They would have had, like, I think Sony's a very interesting one. Sony have always had a semi-open innovation model, kind of right, even properly defined. So you would have been familiar with the old Ericsson mobile phones. And I realize
I'm
very specific Ericsson. Mobile phone premise for all of this, but Sony and Ericsson made a partnership where they shared knowledge and experience and created one of the better handsets that you would have got around the mid-2010s.
Yeah.
On their own, neither one of them could have probably accomplished that because Sony had all the branding expertise and Ericsson had all the technical expertise in mobile.
So they combined them. That makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it made perfect sense for them to do it at the time. The reason you don't see a Sony Ericsson anymore is because Sony acquired most of the intellectual property they needed to make a mobile phone. They didn't need Ericsson anymore. So
we've got it now. Yeah.
I saw your help, Ericsson. We'll be taking this. But
that's a good kind of, I suppose, example of the model of an open innovation that you partner up with somebody that they have the expertise, you have expertise. So yeah, it just makes sense. Yeah. So do you think it's like, is it necessarily a really bad thing to have a closed innovation model, or what are the advantages, I suppose, of having the open one over a closed? Well, is it just that, I suppose, that you're kind of sharing innovation more so than, yeah.
So that's a good way of putting it. There is, like we talked before, like Sony and Ericsson. You would say that for Sony, it was a brilliant idea. For Ericsson, not so much. Like open innovation it's great in a way because you can kind of create, we talked before about kind of radical markets, creating things that people otherwise wouldn't need.
Yeah.
And I think an interesting one I see with the Fortnite video game, which I know nothing about whatsoever.
I don't know anything about that.
But what I do know is that it's free. So they just gave that out into the world. Anyone can do what they want with it. And all these people were creating modifications and they were having partnerships with Marvel and DC and all these big brands. And that's how they started generating money through them. You could buy things. Through partnerships, through licensing and things like that. There was one of those fantastic, but this, it's what you would call a blue ocean model. This never existed before. They went into uncharted waters that no one had ever been in before and said, we're going to create a market for ourselves by giving them this part for free, you know.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah, it was risky as well. Do you know what I mean? That was really risky.
A closed innovation model has its benefits too, but closed innovation typically works on the premise of get there early and stay there and make sure that nobody can come near you. So that's why a company like Nokia, who had such a large market share, probably thought, why would we change? We're winning. Kodak, all these massive
companies. Kodak as well.
They just vanished into thin air one day. Nobody ever noticed. because
they were massive. But again, is it the rate? Just I feel like I don't know. She's on the next, but I feel like in the last like definitely 20 years, technology has really just like went at an unprecedented level of like, you know, of innovation, of kind of change. So like the Kodak, yeah, as well, maybe didn't keep up with that. They didn't see, they could didn't diversify maybe into something like, you know what I mean, to cater for the rate of technology changing, you know?
The kind of tragic thing about Kodak was that they devised most of the technology that is now used on digital cameras all the way back in the 70s and 80s. But because they were making, you know, such good gains from their film and their typical cameras, Polaroid were a different company.
Polaroid, yeah, they're different.
That why would they sacrifice their cash cow for something with an unproven technology?
Right. Yeah.
And this is where
so I think it definitely depends on leaps of faith and leaps of risk, I suppose, as well. That like, you know, if you could do something, you could totally fail. Like I'm sure, I've used Apple a few times. Like I'm sure they've made products that haven't worked at all from behind the scenes. And like, you know what I mean. So it's just it's doing your research. It's anticipating what people want and just kind of taking the risk.
So that's the thing we talked before about the radical change. Radical innovation is kind of the most difficult one to undertake because there's nothing that you know that you're aiming for. So effectively, like when, if you wanted to do something that no one has ever done before, there's no blueprint for doing it. If you wanted to make a rocket ship and go to Jupiter, there's no design for that. We don't have one. So you're going to have to make that up as you go. And that's what radical innovation is. We have to go somewhere that is uncharted. And then when we get there, chart the way we got there after the fact.
Deal with that. It's interesting. Like when you get to such a topic you could kind of think about and like, you know, talk about for ages, because there's so many examples out there of different large companies that we once like such a household names, and like, you know, and then just suddenly, you know.
The interesting thing with innovation, for every success story, there's probably three failure stories that don't get as
well. Oh, yeah.
For every Steve Jobs, there were three copycats and a turtleneck that never made it very far at all.
Oh, I love it. Look, it's been really, really interesting, Joe, to just hear all about it. You're such an interesting guy from just talking about all this with you before. So, we must get you on again now to
another topic for us. I'll always make a time available for the good people at the Involve group.
Thanks, Joe. Perfect. Well, look, at everyone, you can tune into this podcast. We're gonna have it on our website, on LinkedIn. You can find out all about Joe's knowledge, and sure, you can always pick his brain as well if you send his personal number on.
Yeah, I'm easily found on LinkedIn. So,
Joe's actually starting now in the IDA.
In a week's time, I'll be doing business development with the good people at the IDA.
Good stuff. Look, best of luck, Joe. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you. And we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, it's
fantastic. Thank you. See ya. Bye.